From LinkedIn News, I'm Leah Smart, host of Everyday Better, an award-winning weekly podcast dedicated to personal development. Whether you're looking for ways to shift your mindset or seeking more fulfillment in your life, we've got you covered. Join me as we dive into captivating stories and research-backed ideas that have empowered me and others to lead lives with more clarity and intention. Everyday Better, making growth an everyday practice. Listen to Everyday Better on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Jesse Hempel, host of the Hello Monday podcast. In my 20s, I knew what career success looked like. In midlife, it's not that simple. Work is changing, we are changing, and there's no guidebook for how to make sense of it. Start your week with the Hello Monday podcast. Listen to Hello Monday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Tudor Dixon podcast. I am excited today because we have the senator from the great state of Montana and also the chairman of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, Steve Daines, with us here today. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, glad to join you, Tudor.
I'm so glad you're here. You were actually in Michigan not too long ago. I got to see you in Grand Rapids, which was very exciting to have some love paid to the great state of Michigan. But then right after you left Grand Rapids, we had a pretty devastating situation when we found out that Ruby Garcia was the victim of a horrible murder at the hands of an illegal alien. We know that this is a huge problem in our country. We're hearing more and more of these. We've got the Laken Riley story, the Ruby Garcia story, and that's just in the last few months. And obviously, there's concern among families across the country that this type of situation will continue, not to mention all the other dangerous situations with the border. But we keep hearing on the mainstream media, well, why are Republicans holding up this border bill? It's bipartisan. So I want you to explain what this border bill really is.
Tudor, thank you. And by the way, you know, when I saw you in Grand Rapids and then shortly thereafter, you know, Ruby Garcia was brutally murdered. Boy, that hits close to home for me. I mean, we're parents of four children. Our youngest daughter is about the same age as Ruby. I just can't imagine what that would be like as a parent and families here for Ruby Garcia. But look, this so-called border bill that the Democrats were proposing that I voted against, it didn't solve the problem. This problem is very solvable. You go back to when President Trump was in office, he had policies in place that had secured the border in a way that we hadn't seen in a decade in terms of the flow of illegal migrants coming across the southern border. And it was on day one of the Biden administration. I mean, I was on the western steps there of the U.S. Capitol watching Joe Biden get inaugurated in January of 21. And then hours later, he goes down to the Oval Office through executive order. He reversed policies that were working under President Trump. It's as simple as that. It was the Remain in Mexico policies. It was the wall. It was policies that truly had secured the southern border. The problem with that bill that I voted against, that the Democrats are saying would have secured the southern border, the fact is it did not. And the policies didn't secure the southern border. And furthermore, I don't believe that President Biden would have enforced any of the policies we might even pass right now in Congress because he's lawless. He's violating the law. They don't want to solve the problem. The only reason Joe Biden went down to the border here several weeks ago, if you remember, he finally made a trip down the southern border. It wasn't because he wanted to solve the border crisis. He's got a political crisis. Mm-hmm. He knows this is the number one issue facing voters across the country, across Michigan. And it's not just, you know, Republicans' number one issue. This is a number one issue now with Republicans, independents, and Democrats as well. He has a political crisis. They don't know what to do. but they want to see open borders. I think that's something we forget about this. They want to see this flood of illegals coming into the country because this allows, you know, from a census standpoint, you count number of citizens, number of people, not necessarily American citizens, number of people. That's what allocates congressional seats and electoral college. So there's a method behind their madness right now in why they want to see open borders.
And that was kind of my understanding of this border bill, was that there was a daily trigger mark of when they would actually start to secure the border. And that was somewhere around the 7,000 mark. So once 7,000 people cross, then they start to shut down the border. And that's more people than we saw almost the entire Trump administration cross the border. If you do that on an annual basis and look at how many people could come across, and then how does that work? If that's in a bill that you have a trigger mark and that becomes law, then are we permanently held to the fact that, well, we have to wait until we hit this gigantic number every day before we can actually start enforcing an actual border on our country?
Dude, you're exactly right. That was one of the provisions here that just didn't make sense to so many of us. You know, that number was a little over 5,000 per day. And here's the problem, is that the Mexican cartels, we just basically use that as like, that's their quota every day. Because the Mexican cartels have command and control over the southern border. President Biden, through his lawless actions, has basically yielded the power and the command and control responsibilities now to Mexican cartels in the southern border. Yeah, I've made four trips down to the southern border. I've seen this firsthand. It's shocking when you go down there. Of course, many of your listeners have seen the images. I've seen it firsthand. I've been on the border spending time from 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. working the night shift with our Border Patrol agents and seeing it firsthand. But when you put these so-called quotas that were proposed in that bill, it basically just green lights the ability to bring about 1.5 to 1.6 million illegals across our southern border every year.
Well, and I think something that people need to understand is now you see some of these celebrities even coming out because it's affecting them in their homes, in their hometowns of LA or New York City. New York City has really been burdened by this illegal migrant crisis. And they're going, okay, well, wait a minute. We actually have to have a border. We have to have a secure border. We can't allow this to happen. But I really do believe that the reason that this has happened and that we're seeing it in New York is not just because we've got Governor Abbott and Governor DeSantis pushing for other cities to have to take this on, for sanctuary cities to take this on, but also because we're at capacity now. There's no place for these people to go, and they've gone into these sanctuary cities, and those cities are really suffering. Taxpayer dollars are at their very end point going to migrants instead of going to the people of those cities. And I think America's fed up.
Well, America is fed up, Tudor. You're exactly right. We're all fed up. In fact, we're just aghast. We're exasperated. Like, how in the world can President Biden and the Senate Democrats, the House Democrats, who are all complicit in what's going on, continue to basically stand silent?
I heard there's a chance that he's going to come out with some sort of a border shutdown bill or executive order, I should say, because he has suddenly realized I'm up against it. And I think that really what you saw in Michigan was a turning point, because you saw that uncommitted vote, which was significant. 100,000 people essentially in the primary came out just to say, screw you to Joe Biden. Really, Democrats voted uncommitted, which meant, hey, we don't like you. We think you're bad for the country. We're coming out just to make a statement saying we don't like you. And before that election, they were expecting maybe 10,000 to come out. 100,000 came out. This was not just in Dearborn, where you see a big Arab American community. This was in the Michigan State community. This was in the University of Michigan community. These people are fed up with him. And I think that was kind of the catalyst for them to say, hey, Mr. President, you've actually got a problem now.
Well, I think Mr. President has a huge problem in Michigan. And you take a look at his numbers in Michigan, look at his numbers nationally. He's the most unpopular president we've had going back 70 years at this same point in time in a presidency. You know, I remember the days of Jimmy Carter, the late 70s. There's a lot of parallels. We had this very weak president in Jimmy Carter, this very weak president in Joe Biden. You look, we had inflation in the late 70s. Now inflation's now. You saw rising gas prices. We had high mortgage rates. And then we had the geopolitical craziness. Of course, back then it was Iran again. Now it's Iran attacking Israel through Hamas and Hezbollah. So you see these parallels. And I'll tell you what, if you look what happened in the fall of 1980, when Ronald Reagan ran against Jimmy Carter, it was a massive landslide. And by the way, we look back on political history and say, oh, yeah, Reagan won by a landslide against Carter. I will tell you that nobody saw that landslide coming against Jimmy Carter. That was a neck and neck race all the way until 48 hours before Election Day, when then the pollsters started to see this massive shift to Reagan. I think we're seeing something underneath right now going off the electorate with Joe Biden and President Trump. I think you're going to see a big shift as this race closes out, where voters are saying, good grief, we cannot stand, this country can't stand anymore, the world can't stand a weak leader like President Biden anymore. I think it's going to be a big night for President Trump.
You know, I was in a meeting last week and someone said something really interesting that I hadn't really considered because, you know, I was just a baby when Carter was president. But they made a very interesting point. They said, you know, Carter was an unpopular president, but he was in his 50s. He was young. There was still a understanding that he was a capable person, that there was a mental capacity there of sorts. But Joe Biden is in a worse situation and he's in his 80s and he is definitely not with it. I mean, if you watch a video of Joe Biden from just a few years ago compared to today, you can see the mental decline. So I think that this is a twofold problem for him. It's not just that he's unpopular like Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter was still young. That there's a lot to be said for still being young.
Well, I think, too, that's a great point. I mean, I remember I was sworn in to the United States Senate by then Vice President Joe Biden. You know, the vice president swears in U.S. senators. I was newly elected in 14. Joe Biden was Barack Obama's vice president. He swore me in. I mean, I remember the Joe Biden of past when just in terms of his capacities. I mean, age catches us all. Somebody just does. It's just a fact of life as the sands of time go through the hourglass. And the problem that Biden has, the Democrats, is that every day that goes by is a day that he's getting older. Time is not on his side. It's working against him. And he needs to have the self-awareness just to step down. Frankly, everybody needs to cut that point. I mean, why is it that you take a look at, you know, executive boards, pilots, you know, there's requirements for age that says you can't serve past a certain period of time. Now, I'm not suggesting we have to put a time limit, you know, for President of the United States, but you got to be self-aware saying, I'm past my time. It's time to retire. And that's why I think you're seeing younger voters now who typically are more lean Democrat are fleeing the Democrat Party and are moving towards the Republican side of the ledger here because they can't imagine Joe Biden serving four more years when he's really incapable of doing it now.
Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll continue next on the Tudor Dixon podcast.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I've heard so many people that have said, you know, I'm an independent now. I don't want to identify as either one, and yet I'm voting for Trump. So I find it very interesting to see what is going on. I think people don't like the idea of the party system and being pulled to one side and having to identify as something. You know, this generation is like the I don't want to commit generation, yeah, but they are committing. They're just not openly committing. I think that that silent majority that we saw in 2016 is back. And it's bigger than it was, but we'll see. I mean, polls are hard to, they're hard to analyze. Let's talk about what's going on.
I want to wait one point on that. You just made a really good point. Somebody told me once, when you look at elections, you know, and I mean, voters look at their ballot and they've got to make a choice. But I think a really important point here is when you talk about a candidate, don't compare a candidate to the almighty. Compare them to the alternative. So it's going to be a binary choice here between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. And yeah, I know there'll be some young people that may have some problems with President Trump, but they've got huge problems with Joe Biden. And this is a binary choice. One of these two men is going to be the next president of the United States for the next 4 years. Will have a profound, profound impact on the generations to come. That's why I think you're going to see these younger voters say, well, I cannot vote for Joe Biden. I'm supporting Donald Trump.
I think that's a very profound statement. Don't compare them to the almighty. Compare them to the alternative. And I wish we would say that more to Republicans, because I think that's a trap more for Republicans than it is for Democrats. Because, I mean, if you look at just this decision that Donald Trump made coming out on abortion and saying he's not going to sign a federal ban on abortion. And I got to tell you, I come from a situation where abortion crushed us in the state of Michigan. And I've been watching from my perspective what they're doing, because I've been, you know, obviously this is what crushed me. I'm like, okay, what is their next step here? And they've been for months putting articles out in the Atlantic and the New York Times and Vanity Fair about the woman who went to that 20-week ultrasound, which is the ultrasound that insurance pays for, and finds something horrible, and Republicans would force her to have this baby. And I knew the talking points were going to be more than a human being can handle. And that's where I think that that discussion of he is not the almighty. He cannot create morality. He cannot change culture overnight. This is not something that we should even look to politicians to do. We should be coming around the political system and saying, hey, we as Christians, we as the community, we want to talk about family. We want to talk about the importance of children and the importance of a future. But I think people have confused politicians with God and the ability to create morality. And I just think that he has taken a very tough step forward, but it's a step that takes a very, very wicked weapon away from the Democrats.
Well, as you know, Tudor, we're both, you know, big fans of President Trump and worked with him in the past. And I think what he came out and said there, you look at what it, you kind of unpack what he said in that video. He said, first and foremost, we're going to protect families' ability to have in vitro fertilization. That's a pro-family, pro-baby, pro-America kind of stance for families that struggle with infertility. You know, that's a good thing he came out and said, we're going to protect that. Then he said, you know, we're going to have exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. You know, so many voters want to make sure those exceptions are in place. It's going to kind of, in terms of what, you know, as they see this very tough and contentious issue. And, you know, we're both pro-life, dude. I know where you're at. And, you know, I know where I'm at here as a father of four and grandparents of six. But I think President Trump really laid out kind of the right position here. And then he talked a lot about the extreme contrast between where Democrats are at on the issue of life. They will put no limits on abortion up until the moment of birth when a baby can feel pain. That's out of step with the vast majority of Americans, even pro-choice Americans, say that's too extreme. So I think the way the president laid that out was right. And I think we need to look at having a reasonable limits on late-term abortions with exceptions. But I think President Biden set the right tone here. Excuse me, President Trump set the right tone here. But painting that contrast of the radical position the Democrats take on the issue of abortion, we're out of step with most countries in the world, except for countries like in North Korea and China as it relates to of protections for the unborn.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at Gretchen Whitmer here in the state of Michigan. She can't talk about anything above the waist. She can only talk to you about things that happen in your body below the waist, and that is abortion, abortion, abortion. But look at what she was able to accomplish in the state of Michigan. And I do believe that this is because we were not ready for Dobbs. We were not ready for that discussion. And we had been talking to people on the subject politically and not culturally. And so instead of having, well, she claimed she was going to restore Roe in the state of Michigan. This isn't Roe. We have no limits on abortion in the state of Michigan. We have no parental consent. There are no safeguards for young women in the state of Michigan. And so I think that's where we have to say, okay, we have to be honest about this as Republicans and figure out how to make sure that there aren't, we haven't gone beyond what we had for 50 years, that we haven't gone to the most extreme North Korean proposals and North Korean stance on abortion. But that is what we've done in the state of Michigan. And so to me, it's very important that we talk about this issue from the standpoint of how do we reduce that number by supporting families in different ways? And if you look at since the Dobbs decision, we've had a massive increase in abortions across the country. So let's talk about policies that support families. And that's what Donald Trump has been so good about doing, talking about child care for federal employees, talking about paternity leave, maternity leave, all of these things that are helping families to get that kickstart once they have that baby come home in that tough situation of having your first kid and then being able to, okay, we're going to come around this baby. We're going to still have the financial means to do that. And we're going to get a good kickstart on this baby's life. I just think there's so many things as Republicans we can focus on. And I love the fact that that's the kind of people who I think will be in office come November, the election in November.
Well, well said, Tudor. And I think we need to be the party that's pro-woman, pro-family, helping these young moms who maybe a single mom who finds herself here with a young child or two. What are we doing here to help those moms here in those early stages? It's tough out there. And to put it in a broader perspective around, look at the devastating impact inflation has had on these young moms. Let's think about the pressures that they face because of this Biden economy. Let's think about the pressures they face because they think it's unsafe to walk outside the door of their homes right now. They fear for the safety of their children. We have policies that will protect their children. We're pro law and order. We believe in supporting the police, not defunding the police. And so when you start painting those contrasts, I think that's where voters will say, okay, the common sense party right now are Republicans supporting policies that are going to protect my family, not endanger them.
So to actually enact policy that's going to make our community safer, that's going to support moms, that's going to support family, we need to win the Senate. So my question to you, they have a lot of money. How do we do it?
They do. They do have a lot of money, but that's not a new problem, by the way. You know what?
Right. Yeah, that's true.
We typically get outspent 2 or 3 to 1 by the left. I think that's one of the myths we have to continue to dispel. Is I think sometimes voters think, well, the Republicans have all the money, the Democrats don't. It's absolutely false. I mean, if you look at every major Senate race right now across the country, the Democrats have the money. We've got to always work uphill against an avalanche of cash that the left throws at these candidates. But I'll tell you, I mean, you know, you always hear, Tudor, every election is the most important election of our generation. This one really is. I would challenge anybody listening, say, find me a more important election looking back in history than this one coming into 24 and the importance of the U.S. Senate. The reason the Senate's so important and the reason Michigan's so important is because if we don't win back control of the U.S. Senate, the Democrats are going to blow up the legislative filibuster. There were two Democrat senators that saved the legislative filibuster in the last Congress. It was Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Joe, of course, of West Virginia, Sinema of Arizona. They've both announced their retirements. So if the Democrats have control, they will, what they call, nuke the filibuster. And then it's a simple 51-vote majority to pass any laws that they want. They'll be basically unbridled. And what will they do if they have 51 votes to pass a law? First of all, Roe v. Wade to be codified. If you're a pro-life voter, Roe v. Wade is codified. It would usurp any powers of the states, and Roe v. Wade would be codified. But chillingly, well, here's what happens, is D.C. becomes a state. That's two Democrat senators forever. They move the Supreme Court from 9 justices to 13 because they don't like the conservative court. And the founding fathers didn't say the Supreme Court's 9. They left that to Congress to define the size of the Supreme Court. So they pack it with 13, turn it, lurch to the left. And then third, they pass Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer's dream bill, which is called H.R. 1. That's a House bill they would pass, move to the Senate and pass it. And that's a federal takeover of elections. That means if a state wants to put voter ID in place, that's gone because it disenfranchises minorities. They would allow all mail-in ballots everywhere, mandating it. It would take away the state's rights for means and methods of administering elections. So this is a massive power grab. And that is teed up. Adam Schiff, who's a Democrat running for the United States Senate in California, actually laid this out in chilling detail in writing about what they plan to do if they get control. So Tuna, this is not just about a policy fight. This would be a complete takeover, a power grab by the left, and we would have a hard time ever getting back in the majority again for a generation, if not more.
Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll continue next on the Tudor Dixon podcast.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think this is something that people haven't heard. I mean, the federal takeover of elections ensures that not only do they have this power, but they can keep this power. Right now, just for clarification, it takes 60 votes in the Senate. And you're talking about a simple one-person majority would change that. They would change it to that.
Right. And put the further color around that, Tudor. That's what they call the legislative filibuster. In other words, it's a 60-vote threshold to get something passed, dropping a simple majority. But in a 50-50 Senate, see, that's where we were after Joe Biden was elected president. We had 50 Republicans and 50 Democrats in the U.S. Senate. So we were literally a coin toss, 50-50. Kamala Harris is the tie-breaking vote. That's, if you go back to your high school government days, they tell you what happens when the Senate's tied. Well, the vice president of the United States breaks the tie. Kamala Harris has now broken more ties than any vice president in our nation's history. So we've had 47 vice presidents since our great nation was founded. She is now number one in tie-breaking votes. She surpassed John Adams and John Calhoun, who both served 8 years as vice president.
Wow.
Harris, in 3 years now, is the gold medalist as it relates to tie-breaking votes. So what are some of these tie-breaking votes that she has cast? You look at the so-called Inflation Reduction Act that the Democrats passed. Every Republican opposed it. Every Democrat was for it. It was a 50-50 tie. She broke the tie. That cost us $2 trillion. Then you look at the stimulus bill after Biden was elected. You remember there was $1 trillion of unspent COVID money on the sidelines in December of 2020. The Democrats now have control of the House and the Senate and the presidency. They jammed another nearly $2 trillion stimulus package. We said it was going to be inflationary. I remember we were screaming about that. Guess what? They passed it. Kamala Harris breaks the tie, but to get it passed, there's another $2 trillion. So there's $4 trillion of spending because we were short one vote in the U.S. Senate. And then you've got other horrible nominations. Think about these judges and cabinet officials that we lost by one vote. So this is what's at stake. And this is why, you know, bring it back to Michigan. You know, we win the state of Michigan. Mike Rogers wins the Senate race in Michigan. We've won back the United States Senate. You know, voters look for shortcuts in the confusing, you know, all the issues out there. Let me give the voters of Michigan a clear shortcut to understand that how important your state is. Mike Rogers wins Michigan. The gavel is no longer in Chuck Schumer's hands. That's clear because we're going to win West Virginia. We're way ahead there. That race is over. We need to pick up one more state. Let's pick up Michigan.
All right, Michigan, let's do it. We got to do this. Thank you so much, Senator Steve Daines. We appreciate you being here because this was a great history lesson and a great lesson on what the future could be if we do what we need to do. So I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tudor.
And thank you all for joining us on the Tudor Dixon Podcast. For this episode and others, you can check out TudorDixonPodcast.com or head over to the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast, and join us next time. Have a blessed day. 2/3 of Americans are at risk to experience a blackout. Are you ready to protect your family? You could be with the Patriot Power Solar Generator 2000X. This new solar generator has double the capacity and is expandable, so you can run the big appliances like your fridge even longer. Best of all, this new solar generator is fume-free, safe to use inside, and never needs gas, ever. Over 150,000 Americans trust Patriot Power Generators. Go to 4patriots.com/tutor to get your solar generator now. You'll even get a solar panel included free. Go to 4patriots.com/tutor.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Leah Smart, host of Everyday Better, an award-winning weekly podcast dedicated to personal development. Whether you're looking for ways to shift your mindset or seeking more fulfillment in your life, we've got you covered. Join me as we dive into captivating stories and research-backed ideas that have empowered me and others to lead lives with more clarity and intention. Everyday Better, making growth an everyday practice. Listen to Everyday Better on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From LinkedIn News, I'm Jesse Hempel, host of the Hello Monday podcast. In my 20s, I knew what career success looked like. In midlife, it's not that simple. Work is changing, we are changing, and there's no guidebook for how to make sense of it. Start your week with the Hello Monday podcast. Listen to Hello Monday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.